Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, day to be different, just wonderful to have all of you tuning in. Well, it's via the audio stream, medium wave 1548 in Satellite Islam, and we are truly, truly grateful. We've had some showers last night, not very drenching ones, but it has come through. I was on my way to Midran at about 5 yesterday afternoon, and there was a fantastic downpour, but I think the surrounding areas do not get as much rain, and we are truly, truly blessed. This morning we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest, and she's no stranger to Radio Islam, and I has become a household personality, less other than Tanya Fisser. She's the editor of the Garden magazine and the Afrikaans version as well, and has become a well-known personality where she does a program on Home Channel, so a face that many of us are familiar with, and whenever we're looking at the information that she does give, it's always inspiration. Hi, good morning, Tanya.
Good morning, Ishan. How are you?
Very well, thank you. You know, you've become a well-known personality, household name, and but somebody said to me the other day, but Tanya can't just be seen to be found in one place. Before you realize she's in KwaZulu-Natal, and then she's back in Gauteng, and perhaps in the Eastern Cape and Western Cape. I said, well, ask her what she does and what gives her the energy, because we all need that.
You know, it's, the job is sometimes quite demanding, but we able to get around and get to see some beautiful parts of South Africa. So the blessings within it are huge. And to be able to go around and to visit all these wonderful places, sure, well, yeah, you just go, hey?
No, definitely. But they said the adrenaline keeps on pumping when you see art, you know, when you go out to a show and you see Tanya and she's doing something, why is it like 10 men doing one thing? I said, wow. Well, that's true about Tanya. She's definitely a bundle of, you know, energy, has got lots of things that she wants to share. Now, Tanya, we're looking around, and thank you very much for being with us on the program once again. I know you've been speaking to our members last week at the Lifestyle as well, and said that we were highly inspired. I said, that's very visual. You know, we can't really do what you've done last week. Well, let's try. Let's try. Now, Tanya, you know, the weather's warming up. We've come in from just a sudden, you know, bout of winter and cold weather about 2 weeks ago. We were still curled under warm blankets, and suddenly we found it was very hot now. Tell us about this. How good is it for plants, and how good is it for what we're wanting to do in our gardens?
You know, it's first of all, it's good for the soul, number one, because it kind of gets us up and about, and that's what I love the most. I mean, when I was chatting to a lot of the members of the garden club last weekend, everybody, it was a warm day. It was a gorgeous warm day, and you've had a little bit of rain. So what does it do to the gardens? Well, it makes spring come very quickly. So spring is here. It is right here. Spring day being the 1st of September, it's here already. And you can just see that in terms of the things that are going on in your garden right now. And if you had planted some pansies, you're going to see they're flowering beautifully. Poppies are flowering. Your nasturtiums are even still looking okay. Delphiniums are looking great. So the heat just brings on that extra bit of flowering, and that's really what entices spring. So it's a good thing. It's really a good thing. What we've just got to be careful of, and this is what I always say, be cautious, and I don't want to sound negative, but always just be cautious of Mother Nature, and she just comes around to remind us, sometimes even later in September, with a nice cold bout, a really, really cold bout, that just still be aware, just still be very aware.
You know, I always remind myself, I remember that we had snow right into September 1 year, and I know that it could happen. And like
the
you said...
22nd of September, Ishmael, I will never forget it. 22nd of September. And I was like, oh my, I hope those people haven't planted all the impatience, because they're going to be dead right now.
but I think that reminder is so good, because we, you know, whilst we're going in, we could have the sudden bout. And for me, you know, Tanya, as we drive out from, you know, from where we come out south of Johannesburg, and you know, going towards Johannesburg, and look at the informal settlements, and you find all the fruit trees have been blooming already now for the last 2, maybe 3 weeks. You find those, you know, pink blossoms, and you say, wow, what has happened? As the soil becomes so warm already that it sent out the signals, you know, guys, it's time for you to bloom. And I was just worried about that, because come, like you said, that sudden cold snap, it could still happen, and then what happens to all of that?
You know, yes, there always is a little bit of damage. There always is some damage. But we generally, what we find is that these things only happen every few years or so. So, you know, in my mind, I don't like focusing on that because it's not going to be, yeah, it happens once, like they say in the blue moon. It does happen. Don't focus on that. Just keep it a positive. Yes, it might get cold, but we're still going to plant and we're still going to enjoy it. And there are patients out in the garden centers right now and begonias and some of the summer stuff. So yes, you can plant it, but you know, we know when the cold is going to come. We've got cell phones, we've got iPads, we've got telephones, we've got every weather channel in the world. So if it is going to get cold, you run out and you put some frost cover on the plants and they'll be okay.
Well, let's hope that we're vigilant for that. You know, the other, I was listening, and also if you're taking, you know, walking around the neighborhood, you hear the sound of chainsaws and, you know, people cutting and pruning the trees and so forth. So there's a lot of activity happening in the garden this particular time. You find lots of people, you know, whilst Mother Nature is busy itself, and you find lots of things happening there. But we also find that we've got to go out and do some things. Some chores have to be done. You can't wait for it very much later. And I think one of those chores, if not done now, may be a bit too late, and that has to do with pruning. Is that right?
100%. Look, if you haven't pruned your roses now, you know what you're doing today. because it's the one thing that really does need to get pruned. And if you haven't done it now, and if you don't even, if you own a secateur or a pair of secateurs or something that resembles it, just put a little bit of a sunflower oil on it or a little bit of olive oil just to loosen it up a bit and get out there and prune it. There's a very simple rule in pruning, a very simple rule. And I think that what happens is so many of us get so caught up and so stressed out about pruning. Are we going to kill the thing? Is it going to grow funny? And, you know, there's not much that can go wrong. We just make it too complicated. So with the rose bush, if you've got one, the first thing that you've got to do is prune half of the bush. Bang. Just halfway. Straight. Make a straight line, prune half of it away. Once you've done that, you then want to take off all the thin, spindly growth. You know, it's like the little twigs. The thin twigs and the things that aren't looking all that robust. You prune all those away. And then you're going to take off another. So basically, you're reducing the plant down to one third. So from your original height, you're going to prune it down and have one third left. And you're going to have, and what you're going to do is, once you've taken all the spindly things away, you're going to be left with three or four main stems. That's what you want to be left with. Don't worry about inward, outward facing buds and whatever, all of that. And if it's a 45 degree or 65 degree, just prune the poor thing and it will be grateful.
You know, someone said to me the other day, I said, don't let your plants dictate to you. You should be dictating to your plants. Is that
well,
right?
Exactly. You know, there's some very funny stories about pruning, and I often get asked about lemon trees. Should I prune the lemon tree? And the lemon tree is one of those things that you shouldn't actually prune. You should just thin it. Because where you prune the lemon tree, it then makes many shoots that come out there, and it actually gets quite thicker. But then sometimes you can end up with a top-heavy plant. And anyway, I was having this discussion with this lady, and she was telling me that, you know, her lemon tree hasn't flowered and hasn't fruited, and she's had it so many years. And she said eventually she really, really got upset with it and went out one day and hit it with a broomstick. And she beat it. And she said, would you believe it? In a few months' time, it blew, it gave me lemons. I said, well, you would also do something very interesting if you were beaten with a broomstick.
Well, I was hoping she didn't say she was going to give it a big hug off thereafter.
Oh, no, I'm not too sure. I didn't get that part of the story.
Now, Tanya, we're talking about, you know, pruning. What about the stone fruits like the apricots and the peaches and, you know, those type of fruits? Is it but too late to prune now?
You know, it isn't too late. You can still do it, but I wouldn't do an aggressive pruning. I would simply just take away any diseased or any thin, spindly growth. That's what I would do right now. I wouldn't, certainly if you're living in the colder parts of South Africa, where it still is very chilly. You know, Joburg's actually been quite warm, so Joburg and Central. But if you're living much further out, then yes, you can still do your hard pruning.
Now, like you mentioned, you know, next week and Tuesday becomes, not next week, the following Tuesday, I beg your pardon, is Spring Day and Arbor Day. And, you know, it's traditionally been associated in South Africa with tree planting. Now, there's a number of trees that have been recommended. Do you know what the tree of the year this year is to be? I'm not even sure. I tried to get that. I wasn't able to get that information.
You know, the tree of the year is a very interesting thing because, first of all, the tree of the year, and I think it's a great idea. I think it's a fantastic idea, and yes, we should all be planting trees. And trees and Fruit and Trees for Africa do a fantastic job about planting and getting trees out there to plant. And there's always an interesting thing that said, well, when should I have planted a tree? When is the best time to plant a tree? The answer is, I should have done it yesterday. and in terms of tree planting, I think people need to be very cautious and very careful because it's probably one of the biggest decisions you're going to make in your garden. Because when you planted the tree and 20 years later, and it might not have been the right tree to plant, you've got a bit of a problem. And that's why I always seek the advice from garden centres, even just by driving around your neighbourhood and seeing what trees look good, you know, or what trees haven't got masses in gardens. I think that's what's an important thing to remember, because it really is a big decision. And you want to make sure that you are putting the right tree in. And you would remember this. Remember the indoor plant that was, remember when rubber plants were so
fashionable?
Fashionable. Do you remember those things?
Yes, I remember them.
And here's the interesting thing is that, most of the trees, now that you find those very big 40, 50, 40 meter trees, those rubber plants, those were escaped indoor pot plants.
Definitely. Those were brought into indoors and everybody had a plant like that.
And then, you know, then it outgrew its pot. And then everybody thought, well, quickly, let's quickly just go and put it in the garden. And look what happened. There is a sign that things can go wrong, and how we need to make sure that we are planting the right tree.
Like I said, the little fellow has become a giant.
Oh, do you know, it's frightening. I often get these phone calls of what do I do with this? And so many of them are what we call escaped plants, or the ficus. The ficus benjamina, which is probably one of the most common tree, indoor pot plants. Also, those that are taken, planted out into the garden and let loose, and next thing you know, it's coming up six streets down in your neighbor's garden, you know, literally down. So you've got to be, you do have to be very, very careful.
Now, while we're talking about trees, you know, I've had a query about what size of tree should you look for. When you're looking for a tree and you're wanting to plant a tree, you know, as a sapling, should it be a very young one? Should it be at least 1.5 meters, 2 meters, the girth? I'm not even sure if there is such a, you know, sort of stringent recommendations with planting a tree. What is your take on that?
It really is, first of all, at the end of the day, it's all going to come down to budget. What you can afford. There are trees that arrive in your back garden, arrive with a big flatbed and a crane, and they will literally have to lift the tree up in a crane and put it into the hole, because no men could pick it up. So that's really the instant law. There's a very interesting exercises that have been done where a large plant, so say something in a pot or in a nursery bag, that's really big, and then a smallish plant planted in the same size hole with the same nutrition and looked after the same, that the younger plant actually outgrew the taller plant, the bigger plant that was planted. Because of the fact that it was still young, full of vigor, it still had, it hadn't been in the bag very long, so, you know, it hadn't been restricted. So there are various options there. In my opinion, I like to look for a tree that's 1.5 meters in height when planting into gardens, because A, it gives you that, it immediately gives you that look of the structure in the garden, and it does help you to then put other things around it and give you the idea of what is going to happen. It's very difficult to put a plant in a tree that's 30 centimeters in height and think, oh, well, what should I be planting around? It does get a bit challenging. So the trees that are 1.5 meters with a stem, I'm talking of 1.5 meters, they're affordable, and they're going to grow quickly. And always remember, the critical thing about planting a tree is, well, there are two things. It's really nice big holes, and I mean really big holes, loads of compost in it, bone meal, or super phosphate, some organic bio-ocean fertilizer, at least a handful into that. And then the other important thing is staking the tree. Got to stake that tree to give it the initial support that it needs and protection from wind, so that it doesn't end up growing up crooked and over the roof, which you then have to cut off. So, yeah, very important.
So, you know, once you've given us some of the, you know, so the hole has to be fairly big, and it's, you know, got to have lots of compost and bone meal and what else was there? I'm just trying to think of, you know, why is this compost and bone meal and the soil? Would there be a soil mixture? Could you use the same soil that's come out of the earth?
The soil that's come out of the earth, mix that with the compost.
You mix that with the compost.
At least a bag. Use one bag of compost. Mix that with the soil that's come out. So almost like you're mixing a cement mixture. So you've got a pile of soil. Throw your bag of compost on it. Mix that in. Add 1 or 2, 3 or 4 handfuls of bone meal, and then 1 or 2 handfuls of good organic fertilizer. Mix that all in. Put that back in the hole and with the tree, and you're good to go. And also, don't bury the tree too deep, you know. So they up to the original soil level of the bag. Very often, we put that tree too deep into the hole, and then what happens is that the tree ends up with a problem called collar rot, which really is around the bark. The bark actually gets moist and starts rotting, and that can be an issue.
The debate about the whole square or round, what was...
square round holes, oh goodness, square round holes. You know, there was a big movement a few years ago about digging round holes, and I just don't get it. Sorry.
I don't know, that's what I'm saying. You know, people still say, what do you plant? You know, because they've seen... I said, well, all I know, you can make sure the hole is, you know, of an adequate size, and that's fine. You put in all the necessary nutrients and that, and grow. Then you still have the query, square around. I said, well, I don't really know.
Yeah, and I'll stick with the original philosophy of a square hole. Square hole, if you when the plant roots hit the right angles, they are then going to literally, because what it does is stimulates growth. Whenever a root gets against something that is impenetrable, it then stimulates growth and causes more, and basically it sends off more fibrous roots in the opposite direction.
Yeah,
more roots.
So it stimulates root growth, and I see Muhammad is, you know, indicating, well, the roots are growing. They said, I think it was your lecture last week. So he said, well, Tanya, I said, well, fine, let's give Tanya the opportunity. So you know, it's just, you know, you can see his movements, you know. Tanya, thank you very much for that. So it is definitely a square hole. What about care? You know, that's the big thing. You know, many of us sometimes are so enthusiastic when it comes and we say, well, we're going to plant all these things. And then thereafter you find that there's neglect that sets in. Two things: we forget to feed and we forget to water.
Sure, it's the watering part. If anything, it's the watering part. You know, when you planted a tree, just make a little dam around it. So create a little wall around the tree, about 30 centimeters from the actual stem. So create a little bowl almost. Mm-hmm. So that when you do water, the water can stay trapped. And literally a tree, good two buckets of water, or 2 watering cans of water. So we're looking at 10 liters at least once a week. And we do that until the tree is established. And then the next question you're going to ask me, well, is, well, what's established? Well, that's going to be, you know, when the summer rains come, you don't need to still be running out there with 10 litres of water. When the summer rains come, it's okay. But then certainly when we start going into autumn next year, when the rains stop, then you've got to water it. Wait for at least 4 to 5 months. And then you can say, right, this tree is okay. He's looking good. He's looking strong. New growth is coming through. And the tree will tell you if it's happy or not. You know, if you look at the thing, it'll tell you if it's sent out new shoots, if it's actually growing or if it's just sitting there.
Query coming in, you know, I want a tree that has a bit of canopy. It's not maybe more than 5 or 6 meters in height and it has to be evergreen. Any suggestion?
They live in Joburg.
Yes, I think, well, this question just general, I suppose that would be the question.
Okay. I would, you know, there are very, very nice combretums out there, and the combretum is one of the tree of the years. Combretums are great. There are many different varieties that would suit a small to a large garden. And I always worry about the fact when people ask for an evergreen tree. And there are two reasons why, and I'm just throwing it out there for people to think about. An evergreen tree loses leaves all year round.
Mm-hmm.
All year round. The leaves, they're like us with hair. Our hair falls out. You know, if you ever show me an evergreen tree where there are not leaves lying underneath it. Whereas a deciduous tree will lose its leaves all at once. Bang. Literally. It goes over 4 weeks. Loses all its leaves. And then in the winter, when we need and when we want the warmth and the sun to shine through, it can shine through the branches. So I always ask people, just think about that very carefully before you make that decision about evergreen or if you want a deciduous tree.
Thank you very much, Tanya. We're going to go for the news. I've got a couple of questions that still come in. We'll take that all when we come back. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, dear to be different. My name is Ismail Briava. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, medium wave 1548 in Satellite Islam. Many, some of you are itching to go out in the garden, but we've got some wonderful information. And we've got a wonderful guest, and that's Tanya. First, she's sharing so much information with us. And like I said earlier in the program, if you've seen Tanya in action, you'll know exactly what it's all about. Yes, a hive of activity, bubbly, always ready to do, and always on the move. And she's sharing so much and so much useful information. Remember, you could join our conversation with the number 0734613014 if you want to send an SMS, or you could call us on 854-1548. I've got a number of questions that have come through, so remember you could join our conversation at any time. Hi, Tanya. Thank you very much for being with us again.
Sure. It's been great.
Tanya, just two quick ones. The one comes in, a school is having Arbor Day, and what tree do you suggest?
Oh, well, then go with the tree of the year. Combretum is the one tree of the year, and the other one is called, it's a very terrible name, Hetamorpha. I mean, I don't expect anybody to remember that.
Okay. We'll leave it at complicum. That's fine.
It sounds like you've got something really bad wrong with you. go along to their local garden centre, their local GCA garden centre, the one that's got the big yellow flag outside it. They will be able to assist in terms of the tree, give them some good advice, and also help them with the selection. So, you know, all that thing that we were talking about earlier, how do you choose a good tree, they'll be able to assist with all of that. So, yeah, go along.
A couple of questions from one of our listeners is, hi, Tanya, would a coir work on, I'm just trying to get the message, would a coir work on all plants in general?
Yes. 100%, yes.
The next one, can I lollipop my Brunsvilles here now?
Don't do it now. No, don't do it now. Just, I know you just hold back on that excitement factor. Do it literally, I would start pruning it kind of mid-September. Then you can start with the major pruning and training.
Does potting soil have to be renewed? Have to be renewed a few centimeters on the top only, or do you have to do topping soil further down?
Depends how long it's been in there for. If the plant has been in there for literally 2-3 years in the same pot, and the plant is still doing well, then certainly only remove a top 2 or 3 centimeters. If the plant that was in the pot died, or it was an annual and its time was over, and also you've only used it, it literally has only been in there for one season, then also I would only remove the top 3 centimeters. So in other words, if it's more than 2 or 3 years, 2 or 3 seasons, then I would turf it out and start again.
The other question, I have a lovely pincushion protea in full flower, but it's one of those sprawling types. Can I stake it close onto the plant, as proteas resent root disturbance?
Can you stake it? Is that the question?
Yeah.
You can. You certainly can stake it. And I'm thinking, are we talking about staking in terms of to give it support?
I suppose that's what it's not very clear, but he says, can I stake it close to the plant, and as
yes.
you know, he doesn't want to disturb the roots.
No. When you're staking, work about 5 centimeters from the plant, as a general rule. Don't put it so close. 5 centimeters is fine. All the way up, use something nice and firm. And remember, when you're staking, you never want to tie the actual stake directly to the stem. And you might think, well, Tanya, what are you talking about now? What you want to do is, if you've got your stake and you've got the stem, you want to make a figure of 8 in between those 2 stakes.
Okay, so you tie it sort of around, yes, I get that.
Around and around, so that they don't rub on each other and cause damage to the actual plant.
So it's a figure 8 that you sort of create around that, that doesn't disturb the plant at all?
Correct, 100%.
The next one, how often must bulb food be applied to, it's amaryllis and arums?
Sure, okay, well, amaryllis and arums, different kettle of fish completely. With the amaryllis, you start feeding now. Start feeding them now, and if you're using the Hideko bulb food, it'll probably tell you once every 10 days in a liquid form. And your arum lilies, you start doing exactly the same thing. But, you know, your arums, depending on which ones they are, the ordinary white variety that we know that grows out in the gardens, you know, really those just need a good handful of organic fertilizer every 8 weeks or so. They're pretty tough. So I really wouldn't get stressed out about those. But amaryllis, definitely liquid plant food, your bulb food, every 10 days.
What about the color ones? I think that's the one that's more challenging.
Yeah, well, yes.
I mean, I don't know, they sometimes become naughty fellows, you know, you try to and they don't seem to just give you lovely green leaves, and that's all, they just seem to flop on you.
Yeah. You know, the coloured ones we normally buy from the inside of the garden centres, that's where we purchase them. And then we take them home and we put them into a spot, and they kind of do okay for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then their leaves start falling down, and then the flowers start getting limp. They actually require quite a bit of light. That's the issue with them. They need a lot of light, not direct sun, the ones that we buy directly from the garden centres. So make sure they've got lots of well-lit area. Remember, they're also only winter flowering. So when it starts going off, basically, put it into a spot, what I call the ICU, intensive care department. Every garden's got one. Put them in that section. Where dappled shade, let that plant die back, and I would repot it into a permanent pot, like a terracotta pot or a bigger plastic pot. And remember where you put it, or put a name on it, because next year it'll come up again for you. So don't turf it, or don't forget about it, or don't plant it into the garden and then dig it up and wonder, what was this?
Yes, you sometimes think, you know, what happens, you've forgotten about it, and yeah, lo and behold, next thing you find, come up, but what's this? It's a colourful one, I don't even know where it comes from.
Exactly, or we misplace it for a weed.
Let's go, and I've got a caller, let's take the call online. Assalamu alaikum, please go ahead. Hello. Hello, I think we
morning.
Hello, can you hear us? I think we seem to have lost that caller. Tanya, I've got another question that's come through as well. It says that, just trying to get it. My Acacia Sabrina's head is too large for the thin bark, 3 years old. I've hit a stake into the ground entirely, but it still sways in the wind. Does this cause root disturbance?
It will at some point. So what I'm going to suggest that they do is, you know, when you're putting up a tent, you use those guide ropes.
Right.
So instead of using a vertical stake, literally get a little piece of hose pipe, cut a piece of hose pipe off, run that through some rope and run the rope down two sides, so you're literally holding that little tree in its space, giving it more support than just a vertical stake.
Well, that's good advice, that one. The next question coming with regards to cuttings. Is it still time to take some hardwood cuttings?
Yes, for sure, 100%. Remember to use either dyna root or dippin root. There are many different rooting products, hormone products out there. And literally, you can only get one, two, or three, depending on the variety. Dip it into that, put it into a mixture of river sand with some vermiculite, and you generally will get very good results.
You know, someone said use custard powder. Have you heard about that one?
Custard powder?
Mm.
I've got much better things to do with custard powder.
Well, they said it's a good, I'm not too sure. Somebody said they've used it. It works excellent for cutting. So,
that's the first time I've heard this. This is a new one.
Well, let's try. Maybe get a custard flavored plant.
No.
So remember, if you do get a custard flavored plant, please send it over to me.
Yeah, please do. Please do.
Kanya, the next question was with regards to slope. You know, there's a lot of slopes in the area that I live. That's what the person says, and I want to prevent the corrosion. It's quite a large area. What do you suggest?
Okay, you've got to be a smart gardener here, and you've got to go along to your local GCA garden centre, and you've got to find plants that sell in trays. So you'll find, normally near the seedling department, you'll find perennials alongside that you can buy literally 6, 9, 12 little plants in a tray. And you want to look at things like fakies, the lampranthus.
Mm-hmm.
Those are those low, flat-growing. Some of them are slightly taller. They are incredibly tough, mm-hmm. really, really tough. Can grow in dreadful soil, and they really don't require that much attention, but they give you lots of color, and they're good to hold the bank. So look out for things like that, because that will really work.
Tanya, you know that food security and food gardens have become very much the in thing, and we've seen that in coming out of Chelsea, coming out of our local garden centres. What's your take on planting of herbs? Is this the right time? Do you think we should be going into it? How and where do we start?
Sure, big question. Have we got the rest of the day?
Okay, let's just get it short.
Started. Okay, put it this way: if you've never grown any herbs, all right. Let's just stick with herbs. If you've never grown any herbs, go out there and buy five which you know you eat. You know, don't go and buy something like Vietnamese coriander or something that you actually have no idea what you're going to do with it.
Ask me about that one.
So just go and buy five things that you know you're going to use in cooking, whether it's parsley, oregano, or a rosemary or something. And even if it's three, the golden rule is 5 hours sunlight. The other golden rule is they cannot be growing or continue growing in the little pots that you buy them from the garden center. You've either got to get them into bigger pots or get them into the ground. Okay, so that's herbs. Done.
Okay.
Use them. Pick them. The other thing is, if you're looking at veggies, yes, start growing lettuce now, especially in the colder areas, because lettuce won't frost. So start using some lettuce. Just buy one little tray of lettuce and start growing those. Same thing. Full sun or a minimum of a half day sun. Compost into the beds or in pots with potting soil, and they'll be great. So, yes, start it off, but remember we only eat the elephant in bite-sized chunks. Don't go and take out the whole of your back garden and decide I'm going to become a vegetable farmer. You are going to disappoint yourself, and you're going to become overwhelmed and lose interest.
There's another question that comes in quite vexing, with regards to kraal manure. Is it good? Do you use it? Do you take it fresh? Do you take it stale? What do you do with kraal manure? Because we will say, well, fine, put it in then. I've been told to put so much kraal manure in my veg garden, but it doesn't, all my plants have died. What is the thumb of rule with kraal manure?
Yes, there is. Look, if you can get your hands on kraal manure, good on you. Send me the address because I'll come with my bucky. Kraal manure is fantastic, but you've got to put it onto your compost heap and let it compost. It's got to at least be there for 6 to 8 weeks before you start using it in your veggie garden or anywhere in your garden. And when you do start using it in your garden, you literally only want to use a layer of about 3 to 4 centimeters and then dig it into the soil. It cannot be fresh Carmagnol. Fresh Carmagnol will burn your plants.
So the rule of thumb is that definitely you've got to sort of wait for it to dry out and, you know, for
absolutely
it to become...
Yeah, you know, here's the basic rule. It's steaming and hot.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to burn your plants. So it's got to dry out and it's got to compost. And literally when you turn that heat and there's no steam coming from it, there's no heat, because heat is an indication that the composting process is still still happening. Right? It's actually all those little nunus in the bacteria that cause the heat, because it's their energy that makes that heat. But that heat means that it's still composting and it will burn the plants.
There was a certain weed killer that has got bad publicity in the last couple of weeks, you know, from the health authorities, that's Roundup. What's our advice to our listeners?
Sure. You know, weeds in the garden, the definition of a weed is a plant that's growing in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start off with that. There are a couple of ways that we can deal with it before having to use any chemicals. Is A, never let them flower. You know, if you don't have time to pull them all out, all you do is just deadhead them, or just put the weed eater over them. Just don't let them flower, because as soon as they flower, they're going to create more seeds. In between pavers and that, there are other ways of getting rid of weeds, using hot water, boiling water. Just pour that over them. Weeds in the garden, by putting newspaper over them, literally layers of newspaper, putting a stone on the four corners, and all it does is it literally just creates so much heat that the weeds actually die. And then the newspaper and the weeds, you can then just dig into the soil. The thing about chemicals is it's not necessarily the chemicals that are dangerous. It's how we use them.
Okay.
And it's you know, they're in those pamphlets that come in those chemicals, there are long lists of precautions. Be careful. Do this. Wear protective clothing. And I guarantee you that 99% of the public out there does not adhere to that.
Definitely. I think what we do is we just go out there and we see a weed killer. We come in, we just leave the instructions how to use it, and that's all we do. So we don't really, you know, have the time to sort of, like you said, go in there and look at the impact it has, you know, on other things. So I think what you're saying is it's so true, I think. I'm just thinking myself, I'll go in there and look at something, I'll say, well, fine, this is it. Come home, use the mixture, and that's what it's all about.
You know, it's like getting a new cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Who actually reads the book?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody.
Nobody.
Plug it in. You charge it for 12 hours, you get it, and then you try and use it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing. That's exactly what we do with the chemicals and even the fertilizers that we buy at our local garden centers. Please read the instructions, because if we read the instructions, we won't have terrible accidents happening and we won't have really horrible things going wrong, because that's when they go wrong.
So, you know, I understand what you're saying. Prevention is better than cure. Don't wait for the weeds to come up. You know, get rid of them as soon as you see the first sign. Then you won't have to worry about, you know, things like Roundup and that. Unless you know, in commercial farming, but I don't think anyone really is into that big space. So what we've got to do is make sure that we take, you know, control of our gardens. A quick question coming through with orchids. I've bought an orchid and I've been looking after it, nurturing, and I now see buds coming on. What should I be doing next?
Fantastic. Sit back and watch it.
Well, money well spent, is that what it's all about?
Absolutely. Now's the time to sit back and enjoy.
Definitely. Okay.
No, just carry on doing what you're doing.
The question coming with bougainvilleas, bracts coming on. Bougainvilleas in pots, do they do well, or should I now transplant them into into the ground?
I know bougainvilleas are great in pots, eh? As long as it's not the pot that they bought it from nursery, because they need to get potted into something bigger, but they actually are brilliant in pots. They do very well. Remember, fertilizing probably only 3 times a year is enough for a bougainvillea. Don't go too overboard. And that the new bracts are coming through, great. You're going to get lots and lots of flowers.
Finally, before we let you go, Tanya, just tell us what's the new trend, what you've picked up for the season 2015.
Go out there and find orange and purple flowers. Orange and purple flowers, plant them together, put them in pots, Even if you've just got a small garden, plant something orange and something purple. Watch how beautiful it does and watch what it does to your mood.
I'm just trying to think of orange and purple. What combination would that be? I'm just trying to think.
You know, at the moment, and out in the garden centres right now, they're awesome orange pansies, beautiful orange pansies. They're purple pansies, two great combinations. Then you can get orange nemesias. You can also get purple nemesias. So, you know, there's wonderful plants out there. They're purple salvias that you can put in. Maybe with some orange, some orange impatiens and sun patience in front of them. Oh, you know, combinations are wicked. But yeah. Go out there and do it.
Well, it sounds very much like the Central American birds that you're talking about, because I've seen some of these colors on those birds and they just look magnificent, but I didn't know how they sort of combine in the garden. But thank you very much. So orange and purple, that's the trend, people. Thank you very much, Tanya. You take care. It's just fantastic having you on, and we know we're going to be energized and going to be running around like you do in your garden. But you take care. Enjoy the rest of the night. I'm not too sure. Are you busy this morning? Are you going to do some show,
today,
or are you just taking it easy?
I was in my garden the whole of yesterday, and today I'm actually meeting with a friend that I haven't seen for about 20 years, her and her family, so I'm very much looking forward to it.
And what do we get in the garden magazine? Is that up, and is there lots of things that we can...
It's up and about, and please have a look for it. There's a lovely trending article, what to plant. We're talking about lots of good bulbs for summer, lots of hints and tips to do now, and also to get to now to make sure that your summer garden is going to be looking awesome and gorgeous.
And do you have some connections with the post office? Do you think they'll deliver our magazine?
We talk very nicely to them, but sometimes they don't listen.
Take care, Tanya. You look after yourself and enjoy the day, and we'll speak to you again.
Thank you. Pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Tanya Fuster giving us some wonderful advice. Always so information, inspirational. And really, if you're wanting to buy a magazine on gardening trends, Gardener is the magazine. Give you some wonderful ideas. Gives you some wonderful thoughts on what is to be done in the garden. Always very, very inspirational. And I look at that, I say, wow, where does she get all the ideas and all the time to do that? But it's just a wonderful magazine. And try and get your hands on the magazine that's out now for this particular month. You take care. That's all for me until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.